heavily, and you're listening to the Divided Kingdom radio show. Well, here it is. Getting toward the end of June, we're not too far from the 250th anniversary of this beautiful country. So we'll talk a little more about that later. But I'm going to begin. We have several things that have to do with religion today. This is a Christian program, but I don't limit myself to Christian topics, but it just so happens there's several good ones this particular show. I'm going to begin with one, quoting from the Western Journal. It has many good articles, and the title reads, War Department Whittles Down Number of Religions It Recognizes, by Michael Austin, June 20th, 2026. Well, how many religions do you think you could name? This is Lou speaking now, and I'll get back to the article in just a moment. Gosh, I would think maybe 40. If I really stretched it, maybe I could write down 40 names of different religions worldwide. Well, let's get to this article. The War Department reduced the number of religions it formally recognizes from 211 down to 31, condensing some of the list and entirely removing other options. Military.com reported on June 4th that a memorandum released last month made the adjustments, which were the first amendments to the officially recognized religions list since 2017. And let me just turn my fan off, maybe making a little hissing noise in the background. That's a little quieter. And back to the article. The change was made to quote, streamline the Department of War collection of religious preferences for service members to enhance the delivery of targeted religious support from the chaplaincy, unquote. Anthony Tata, TATA, Undersecretary of Defense for Personnel and Readiness of the United States, signed the memo. These are his words, Mr. Tata, Anthony Tata. Quote, the new list will provide chaplains with clear, readily available information that will better enable them to anticipate the religious support needs of service members and to provide religious support activities that align with service members' personal faith and practices, unquote. The new list removed designations such as atheists. Well, let me comment upon that. This is Liz speaking now. I thought atheism was a lack of religion, not a religion. So that makes sense to me. Some of the others taken off the list were Asatru, which I've never heard of, Deus, which I thought disappeared in the 1700s, Druids, Ekankar. Let me spell that one out. Ekankar. Heathens, which, again, this is loose speaking, I thought was just a general name for those who aren't Christians or Jews or Muslims. Humanists, that, again, I thought was more of a philosophy than a religion. Magic, with a K in the end. New Age, pagan. Rosicrucianism, shaman. Spiritualist, Troth, that's one I've never heard of, T-R-O-T-H, Unitarian Universalist, and Wiccans. The new list includes nearly two dozen branches of Christianity, ranging from Roman Catholic and Orthodox to Baptist and Presbyterian, as well as agnostic, Baha'i, Buddhism, Mormonism, Hindu, Islam, Judaism, and Sikh, S-I-C-K. Wrong, S-I-K-H. And other options that can be chosen from the list are no religion and other religions. Well, that pretty well covers everything there is. And the article says, Military.com noted that the move comes as War Secretary Pete Hegseth leads the Pentagon to an embrace of the Christian heritage that has long shaped the American military. Hegseth announced an effort in March to reform the chaplain corps, which included amending the list of recognized religions. And Mr. Hegseth said, quote, The previous system had ballooned to well over 200 faith codes. It was impractical and unusable, and many codes were never used at all. Unquote. The vast majority of service members only used 6 of the codes, meaning that reducing the size of the list also made practical sense. And Pete Hegseth went on to say this brings the codes in line with its original purpose, giving chaplains clear, usable information so they can minister to service members in a way that aligns with that service member's faith background and religious practice. Unquote. All right, so that was from the Western Journal. War Department whittles down number of religions it recognizes. June 20th, 2026. And that, I presume, is still available online if you want to get a copy of that. Just go to thewesternjournal.com. And I presume they have some form of search, where you can search for the articles. Well, this is indeed the Divided Kingdom radio show. As I said, I'm Lou Cavalli. And you can listen to this program in various ways. For example, you can go to WWCR, that's short for Worldwide Christian Radio, WWCR.com, and listen direct on the internet. They have 3 or 4 transmitters, and you can check their schedule or their program listings to find out which transmitter has this program. It goes out over the airwaves 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Thursdays, and it repeats 8 a.m. on Saturday mornings on WWCR.com. Those are all Eastern at the particular time now. I guess we're still in Eastern Standard Time. Won't be too long before we switch to daylight savings time. But in any case, it's 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. 8 p.m. Thursday, 8 a.m. Saturday. You can also, if you have a shortwave radio, many of you listeners do, you can hear it live on Thursday evenings on a shortwave frequency of 4.840 megahertz. And the repeat Saturday morning on 7.490 megahertz. Now, all of these are listed on my website, which is DividedKingdomRadio.com. DividedKingdomRadio.com. And there's a nice tribute to my late wife, Elizabeth. And if you scroll down near the bottom of that main page, home page, you can see the various ways. Another way is our web mistress, I guess that's the proper way to designate her, the lady who runs the website for us, has a very fine website of her own called K-Star Talk Radio, and the website is simply kstartalkradio.com. You don't have any punctuation marks in there except for the period before the com. kstartalkradio.com. She has a multitude of very fine programs on that website. And if you go to the website, kstartalkradio.com, and click on the menu, you can see the different offerings and what time and what days of the week you can get them. Our program, if the menu is up to date, and I believe it is, our program airs Saturdays at 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. And again, that's on the internet, kstartalkradio.com. Then it's also on Sundays at 10 a.m. So all of this is listed on my website, which again is DividedKingdomRadio.com. This program is not primarily a program of Christian programs. Rather, it's giving the news from a Christian emphasis and trying to pick programs that are interesting. And if we have Jewish and Muslim listeners, great. You're certainly welcome, and I hope that the programs are informative for you folks, too. Now, next, we'll go to the New York Post, good conservative paper. This one is by Miranda Devine, and she has some very fine articles usually fairly long articles that appear from time to time in that newspaper. And you can sometimes get copies, even down here in Maryland, of the New York Post. But you can certainly get it online anytime. All you have to do is just do a search. I think it's just newyorkpost.com, but just do a search. That's what I always do. And it'll quickly pop up as either the top offering or one of the very top ones. Now, this was published June 21st, 2026, just a few days back. And it says, the Anthony Fauci COVID-19 origins cover-up runs deep, and that word deep is in quotation marks, into our intelligence community. Again, my Miranda Devine. On her final day as Director of National Intelligence, Friday, Tulsi Gabbard released damning declassified evidence accusing Dr. Anthony Fauci of causing the COVID-19 pandemic, engaging in a cover-up about the virus's origins in China, and lying to Congress about it. Perhaps most disturbingly, he was assisted by the U.S. intelligence community. And Ms. Gabbard said before she retired from the position, quote, it's time you know the truth. Never before seen communications and documents exposing how Dr. Fauci provided millions in U.S. taxpayer dollars to fund dangerous gain-of-function research at the Wuhan lab, worked with politicized elements within the intelligence community to suppress the truth about his actions and hide the virus lab leak origins, and lied to Congress while under oath in 2024. The tactics used to hide the truth are straight from the deep state playbook. And that ends the quote. Again, that was from Tulsi Gabbard, the outgoing Director of National Intelligence. The article goes on. Right on cue, 2 days after the bombshell release on Sunday, the Washington Post ran a 9,000-word hit piece accusing Gabbard of taking instructions from a Hindu cult leader described in the headline as her guru. It was a gratuitous exercise in guilt by association, masquerading as an investigation. That is the Washington Post investigation. Another tactic straight from the deep state playbook. Meanwhile, the Washington Post did not publish a word about Gabbard's Fauci revelations. Nor, for that matter, did any mainstream outlet on the left. The same news organizations that helped cover up the origins of the COVID-19 pandemic now overwhelmingly believed to have come from a leak from China's Wuhan Institute of Virology are still refusing to come clean. On left-wing social media platform Blue Sky, they're still talking about wet markets and pangolins. That's a new word to me. P-A-N-G-O-L-I-N-S. I'm not even sure what that is. I'll have to type that into the internet search engine at some point. Meanwhile, Fauci, age 85, receives a handsome government pension, holds a prestigious role as, quote, distinguished university professor, unquote, at Georgetown University, and is showered with rich awards for, quote, defending science, unquote. Gabbard's revelations go some way to explaining the surreal disconnect. Fauci is protected by the deep state and its tentacles, which extend deep into the media, academia, and other reputation-enhancing institutions. His, quote, close relationships, unquote, with the intelligence community, quote, shielded him from scrutiny as he wielded outside influence, said Ms. Gabbard. She went on, Fauci was behind-the-scenes advisor who, alongside his handpicked so-called experts, pushed the intelligence community to endorse a natural animal origin to hide his dangerous gain-of-function research that he funded using taxpayer dollars, unquote. Gabbard, who had to leave the role due to her husband's illness, did her best to fight for transparency against an array of forces in Washington that regarded her as a loose cannon and sought to shut her out. But President Trump has installed bulldog Bill Pulte as her interim successor, despite the best efforts of the Senate to expedite the confirmation of Jay Clayton, former SEC chairman, whom Trump has named the next Director of National Intelligence. Trump intervened ostensibly for another reason, to slow the process, giving Pulte time to look for more bodies. Meanwhile, Fauci's nemesis, maverick Republican Senator Rand Paul, has again sent criminal referrals to the Department of Justice against Fauci for the 2024 alleged perjury that Gabbard detailed in her Friday news dump. Perhaps more significantly, Paul, Republican of Kentucky, insists the 11-year blanket pardon President Joe Biden issued for Fauci in his last minutes on his last day in office should be challenged in court, both because it was signed with an auto pen and because of its rare retrospective nature. Curiously, Fauci's pardon stretches back to the exact same date as Hunter Biden's retrospective blanket pardon, January 1st, 2014, and encompasses his oversight of NIH and AID funding of gain-of-function research at the Wuhan lab via the New York-based cutout, EcoHealth Alliance. And I'm going to interject right now. Those of you that heard us in the past, when Elizabeth was alive and on the program, remember that we wrote a book about this whole thing. And that word, EcoHealth Alliance, two words, came up a lot. And what was it? Well, this explains it now. Back to the article, the now defunct, oh, that's interesting. The now defunct EcoHealth was a non-profit, supposedly devoted to predicting future pandemics. It was situated in a nondescript Manhattan office building. Its enigmatic founder, Peter Daszak, received millions of dollars in various grants from Fauci's outfit. But his biggest donor was the Department of Defense, which gave him more than $40 million for the purpose of, quote, combating weapons of mass destruction, unquote. Back in August 2021, and this is now the author of the article, Miranda Devine speaking. Back in August 2021, I was told by a former EcoHealth employee who requested anonymity that Daszak had been approached, this is in quotes, approached by the CIA in late 2015, unquote, to help access the Wuhan lab, believed to be a Chinese military operation. Daszak later told House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer that he had been contacted by the CIA and other intelligence agencies, although he didn't say when. If the intelligence community knew about the dangerous gain-of-function research on bat coronaviruses at Wuhan, did it know about evidence of a potential leak as early as August 2019? That was the start of a dramatic increase in car traffic around major hospitals in Wuhan. Now, that's interesting, because remember that the COVID pandemic didn't start in this country until the spring of 2020, about a half year later. Let me read that one sentence again. That was the start of a dramatic increase in car traffic around major hospitals in Wuhan in the late summer and fall of 2019, long before the outbreak was reported to the world. A Harvard Medical School study published in June 2020 found that aerial images captured by private satellites of five Wuhan hospitals suggested a health crisis was underway in Wuhan at the time. Traffic and parking lot volume were compared with the same period in 2018. There was a steep increase in volume. This is in quotes, a steep increase in volume starting in August 2019, says the paper. And then the quote goes on, culminating with a peak in December 2019, the date of the first confirmed COVID-19 case. Between September and October 2019, five of the six hospitals showed the most traffic, quote, coinciding with elevated levels of Chinese search engine Baidu search queries for the terms diarrhea and cough. And this is Lou speaking now. So in other words, between September and October of 2019, now again, this is months before they admitted that there was a serious problem in China, the Chinese, these search engines were recording elevated levels of searches for the terms diarrhea and cough. Don't you wonder why? All right. Back to the article now. This is also interesting. Back in the USA, in August 2019, an anonymous whistleblower, now known as CIA analyst Eric Chiamella, lodged the complaint that led to Trump's Ukraine impeachment. The White House was consumed by the impeachment during the fall and winter of 2019, when the COVID-19 virus started circulating in the U.S. In other words, that was a very convenient thing by a man working for the CIA to tie up the White House, President Trump, in other words, so that he wouldn't have the time and energy to devote to this virus until much later. And it goes on to say, today the White House is distracted by Iran. So transparency about the role of the intelligence agencies in protecting Fauci and covering up the origins of the pandemic is probably not a priority. Just like Gavin and Paul's efforts, there is distinct possibility that nobody will be held accountable for what Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. last week called, quote, among the most consequential crimes in human history, unquote. And Miranda Devine concludes by saying, maybe some secrets are just too terrible to be told. That's a great article from the New York Post, June 21st, 2026, just a couple days back. Okay, a little different topic now from the Washington Times. Feds move to close commercial driver's license loophole after deadly Virginia bus crash. This appeared Wednesday, June 17th, about a week ago. On May 29th, a tour bus plowed into stop traffic on I-95 in Virginia at 2:30 in the morning. Five people died, among them an entire family traveling home to Massachusetts. The driver, a Chinese immigrant who officials said did not speak English, was charged with five counts of involuntary manslaughter. Investigators, and I'll just interject, I suspect most of us, asked a simple question. How did this man get a license to drive a bus? The answer is more complicated than anybody expected. To learn how this happened, you have to understand something about how commercial driver's licenses, CDLs, are issued in the United States. And it starts with a process that most people don't know much about. Now, the author of this article, from this point on, makes it a question and answer. And she says, I'm Susan Ferriccio, and this is the Washington Times question and answer on the push to reform commercial driver's license testing. And so, again, the author is Susan Ferriccio. First question, why does the federal government treat CDL licenses differently? She says there are two parts to a commercial driver's license test. Why does the federal government treat them differently? Commercial driver's license testing starts with a written knowledge test, which in many states has long been offered in multiple languages other than English. Excuse me. Applicants must also pass a driving skills test. Unlike the written test, it must be taken in English, with no help from an interpreter in all 50 states. The federal government has long allowed states to offer written tests in different languages, but the Transportation Department is now cracking down on this practice. It is pushing states to administer the written test, like the driving test, in English only. Now, the next question by Ms. Ferraggio, how long has the federal government known about this, and what have they done? The inconsistency between the two tests is long-standing, but the federal government is taking steps to force states to ensure that truck and bus drivers understand English, following a string of fatal accidents involving drivers who didn't understand English. Federal officials recently threatened to withhold $40 million from California until the state agreed to enforce English proficiency standards during roadside truck and bus traffic stops. And I'm going to skip down a little bit to give you some of the other states where they do allow multiple different languages for the written test. Those include, and I'll just say them briefly, New York State, Massachusetts, Colorado, Washington State, Virginia, and no doubt some others. Now, the next question, who is actually responsible? The crash happened in Virginia, but the license was issued in New York State. So who's responsible? Well, it says federal investigators, earlier this month subpoenaed and obtained from New York State all records related to the commercial driver's license obtained in New York by Jing Sheng Dong, 48, who was charged with 5 counts of involuntary manslaughter in the Virginia crash. The Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration is investigating the driver's training and licensing. An official told the Washington Times it will hold any state training school or company accountable that put a dangerous driver behind the wheel, unquote. Well, it goes on to say some of the things that might be done. I don't see too much that's necessary to read in the interest of time here. But if a man cannot, or a woman for that matter, cannot read English, this is now loose speaking, how do they read road signs? If you can't read a road sign, are you going to make a sudden last minute change because you couldn't see the signs up ahead? If you can't see warning signs or know what they say, are you going to go full speed, as this driver did, into a barrier or other cars that have stopped? Seems common sense that if you cannot read English, you better wait till you learn English before you get a driver's license, especially a commercial driver's license with big rigs, buses, and so forth. All right, let's take a little time out here. If you'd like to write to me with your comments about the program, I've got several comments recently that I thought were really good, and I've tried to implement some of them, such as saying, and I just forgot to do it, but I'll do it now, at the end of the article, what the source was. That article I just read about the driver's licenses came from the Washington Times newspaper, Wednesday, June 17th. So if you'd like to write to me, write to Lou, L-O-U, Caverly, C-A-V, as in Victor, E-R-L-Y, and the address is Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. That's Lou Caverly, P.O. Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609. And I love to get your letters. If you can send a little donation to help out with the expenses, cost me about $600 a month to get the program, both for the taping and for the shortwave, and for that matter, the internet itself, if you go that route. I'll give those ways to get the program again a little later, and I'll also give the address a little later if you didn't have pencil and paper handy. Okay, what else do we have today? Now back to something that's a little more on the religious theme. From the Western Journal, Attacks Against Christians Rise in Major European Country, by Michael Austin, June 22nd, 2026. What's the nation? Well, here we go. The nation which produced Charlemagne, Godfrey of Boulogne, Bouillon. My French is not that great. St. Louis, I can say that one. John Calvin and other heroes of Christendom is now seeing increasing levels of attacks against Christians. International Christian Concern noted in a June 3rd report that the French government's Interior Ministry found a 70% rise in anti-Christian attacks in 2025. Those attacks included a, quote, doubling of physical assaults targeting members of the Christian community and church leaders, unquote. There was also, quote, a sharp rise in disruptions to religious services and threats against worshipers, unquote. Jews, likewise, saw increased religious pressure, with 53% of all recorded anti-religious acts in France targeting Jews or synagogues. Meanwhile, 34% of recorded anti-religious acts targeted Christians or churches. Worthy News reported that there were a total of 843 anti-Christian incidents in 2025, an increase of 9% from the prior year. Most of the incidents involve vandalism or targeting of churches, but there are now more attacks against individual Christians. The French Interior Ministry said, quote, these anti-religious acts undermine freedom of conscience and the free exercise of religion. They also weaken national cohesion. They endanger the very balance of our society. And I think that ends the quote there. Yes. The author goes on to say there are fewer anti-religious incidents against Muslims, but such reported incidents are also on the rise. The French Constitution allows citizens to choose and change their religion. But French President Emmanuel Macron signed a law in 2021, quote, providing authorities broader powers to monitor and close down religious organizations and groups they determine to be promoting ideas contrary to French values, unquote. And that's according to a report from the U.S. State Department. The law was meant to target Islam, but various Roman Catholic and Protestant groups say this statute, quote, risks undermining fundamental freedoms, such as freedom of worship, unquote. France has an officially secular government, meaning there is strict separation of religion and state. Government employees are banned from wearing any signs of religious affiliation, even Christian crosses, while carrying out their duties. The State Department, I presume that means the U.S. State Department, report added, quote, the prohibition applies during working hours, even if the agents are not in their place of employment, and at any time at the place of employment, unquote. The government usually cannot fund new places of worship, but owns and is responsible for upkeep of those built before 1905, especially Roman Catholic facilities. So I assume Notre Dame in Paris will come into that head. I'm not sure, though, about that. Okay. Then there was a big to-do about Major League Baseball, MLB. I got two articles on that, and I'll kind of condense them in the interest of time. First one was from LifeSite News. And did I say, I don't think I said, the preceding article was from the Western Journal on June 22nd. This article is from LifeSite News. on June 19th, DOJ, that's Department of Justice, to investigate MLB, Major League Baseball's threat to discipline players for Bible verses on Pride hats. The U.S. Assistant Attorney General for the Civil Rights Division warned Major League Baseball, MLB, that she is requesting an investigation of its threat to discipline three San Francisco Giant pitchers who inscribed scripture verses on that team's Pride Night hats. When the San Francisco Giants issued hats to team members with LGBTQ Pride rainbow colors in the logos, three Christian players wrote Bible verse numbers on their hats to signify their support for the biblical meaning of the rainbow, instead of its modern association with homosexuality. One player refused to wear the Pride cap. Giants pitcher Landon Roop took the lion's share of the heat for inscribing Genesis 9, 12-16 on his Pride Night cap. Genesis 9, 12-16 recounts God's covenant with Noah and his descendants through the sign of the rainbow. In response, MLB issued a warning to the players telling the LGBT sports site, OutSports, quote, "The writing on the cap violates our rules and consistent with normal practice. We have warned the players about future violations," unquote. But Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, Amit Dhillon, on Thursday published a letter to MLB Commissioner Rob Manfred warning him that the Department of Justice, quote, "will use all available means to hold employers accountable for violating the religious rights of their employees." And she went on to say on X, where she posted the letter, quote, "Major League Baseball encouraged players to wear Black Lives Matter on their uniforms, but reportedly threatened Christians who wrote Bible verses on their hats." And USEEOC, which is the U.S., what's that chart for? Equal Opportunity Employer, I think. Well, anyway, USEEOC will investigate whether this amounts to religious discrimination, unquote. She pointed out in the letter that Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 prohibits employers from discriminating against anyone because of their religion. Employers are required to reasonably accommodate an employee's religious observance, unless doing so would impose undue hardship on the conduct of the employer's business. Okay, I'm going to skip down a little bit now. Republican U.S. Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri also wrote a letter demanding answers from Manfred, suggesting that the league may have discriminated against its employees on the basis of religion. And Missouri Attorney General Catherine Hanaway also issued a warning to MLB, noting that, quote, "Missouri law prohibits discrimination based on religious beliefs." Also, Florida Attorney General James Othmeyer and Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves and Texas Governor Greg Abbott and actor and comedian Rob Schneider also criticized the MLB for condemning the Christian players. That was from LifeSite News, June 19th. Then we had from the Gateway Pundit, I'll just give you a little rundown on this, and it says, just in, Major League Baseball Commissioner responds to Senator Josh Hawley after Hawley catches the league in double standard. This is by Jordan Conradson on June 22nd, 2026. And I'll try not to repeat what we've already talked about here. And Major League Baseball Commissioner Robert Manfred responded to Missouri Senator Josh Hawley's congressional investigation on Friday, doubling down on the MLB's decision to bar players from wearing Bible verses on their uniforms, yet allowing Pride-themed uniforms to be worn. and transfer the blame to San Francisco's, make that San Francisco Giants for, quote, inadequate, unquote, communication with its players for the recent controversy. And let's see, we already wrote pretty much about this. Now, one of the players, Roop, and I don't have his first name in front of me at the moment, but Landon Roop, said that he wore the verse to share, quote, God's covenant and the promise that he makes to us and his faithfulness and his mercy. As we said before, that's the quote was Genesis 9, 12 through 16, or the reference to it. Now, let me skip around a little bit. Time is flying here. All right. Senator Josh Hawley, in a letter to the Commissioner Manfred, stated, MLB has said that it is a content-neutral, it has, a content-neutral policy, and that Major League Baseball respects players' right to free expression. But this is doubtful, given that MLB is openly promoting a political viewpoint and possibly compelling adherence to that viewpoint. The league's claim that it merely forbids writing of any kind on its uniforms does not survive a cursory review of the league's recent history. In 2020, MLB itself turned its uniforms and its fields into a billboard for political and social messages. It created jersey patches reading Black Lives Matter and United for Change. It authorized BLM to be stenciled onto pitching mounds, and it suspended its own equipment rules so that players could display progressive political slogans on their cleats, the letter continued. The league went beyond, and this is part of the quote, the league went beyond tolerating speech. It designed speech, promoted speech, and shoehorned social and political messages into the game broadcast to millions of Americans. Yet, when three players added a handful of characters citing the book of Genesis to their caps, the league reached for its notebook, or rule book. Unquote. Manfred responded to Hawley in a letter dated Friday, June 19th, denying that it discriminated against Christian players and claiming that the league policy is, quote, enforced without regard to the substance of the messaging, unquote. And I'll skip down a bit. Manfred explained that the MLB adopted a policy in 2023 of not permitting clubs to utilize special uniforms, hats, or equipment in their celebration days except under very narrow circumstances, such as patches honoring deceased members of the baseball community, commemorating baseball milestones, and things of that nature, unquote. However, the policy exempted the Giants and the L.A. Dodgers, citing the large LGBTQ communities in those cities. The exemption still requires, quote, that no player or uniform staff would be required to wear them, and that the team would speak to the players to make sure they were comfortable with the apparel, Manfred wrote. All right. He, that's Manfred, emphasized that no player will be forced to wear gay pride paraphernalia, but that it remains, quote-unquote, crucial for the MLB to prevent players from voluntarily wearing Bible verses on their uniforms under its policy, which requires messages on uniforms. Unless, of course, the San Francisco Giants or LA Dodgers want to wear pride uniforms. And skipping down, that ends the quote, by the way. The message is clear. Christian players have no right to exercise their religion and will be penalized if they alter the uniforms with Bible verses. But Pride Night is exempt from MLB rules. And it concludes, can we expect the Republicans to actually do something about Major League Baseball's religious bias, favoring secular pride displays over Christianity? Or will they continue selling us fake wins and allow Christians to be discriminated against? All right. Good article from Gateway Pundit, June 22nd. Okay, now here's an important one. I don't know which of these two I'll do first. I think this one. This one is from Fox News. Ben Cass, Riley Gaines, slight scrubbing of faith from kids' U.S. history books for America's 250th. This is by Christine Parks, Fox News. June 23rd, 2026. Very recent article. For America's 250th birthday, former HUD Secretary Dr. Ben Carson, author and retired neurosurgeon, tells Fox News Digital that faith is inseparable from America's founding. His new book, Built on Faith, a hardcover picture book for children, was published by Brave Books in June, this very month, June of 2026. A new report alleges that public libraries and publishers are censoring faith from the American story while actively pushing progressive revisionist history to young readers. The study by conservative publisher Brave Books, entitled The America 250 Faith Gap, analyzed more than 300 books across 25 reading lists curated by children's publishers, public libraries, and other institutional sources for the nation's upcoming 250th anniversary. The study reportedly found zero titles directly addressing faith, religious liberty, or Christianity's role in the founding of the United States, despite religious liberty being enshrined in the First Amendment. While books in The Great Awakening, The Faith Lives of the Founders, and The Black Church's Role in American History were completely absent, according to the report, the lists that they are being promoted include Ibram X. Kendi's Stand for Kids and Nicole Hannah Jones' Born on the Water, a picture book tied to the controversial 1619 Project, instead. Several recommended titles focused heavily on transgender activism during the 1969 Stonewall Riots, including a picture book for young children. Lists also heavily promoted Kate Messner's History Smasher series, which claims to expose myths, lies, and secrets in American history, as well as sympathetic biographies of former President Joe Biden and former Vice President Kamala Harris, with no equivalent biographies of Republican leaders. According to Brave Books, the most common themes across the list, and again, these are lists by libraries and other educational institutions. The most common themes of those lists were the American Revolution, minority perspectives, Black history, civil rights, and women's history. Books focused on American symbols, the classics, the founders, and civics made up of the minority of the recommendations. The list frequently used words like complicated, it, and untold to describe American history. And what Brave Books says is an effort to reframe the American story rather than celebrate it. Brave Books noted that while many of these titles have literary merit and share important historical perspectives, the exclusion of faith leaves the next generation with a skewed view of U.S. history. The report's findings drew sharp reaction from former HUD Secretary Dr. Ben Carson and OutKick host Riley Gaines, who are both Brave Books authors. And here we have a quote from Dr. Carson that he told to Fox News Digital. Quote, faith is not a footnote in the American story. It is the foundation of that story. The Declaration of Independence says our rights come from our Creator. Benjamin Franklin called the Constitutional Convention to prayer before they produced a document that has stood for 250 years. George Washington surveyed battle after battle and survived battle after battle in ways that defied all human explanation. These men knew where their strength came from, unquote. Carson argued that it is essential for young people to understand the role faith and religious liberty played in U.S. history to truly appreciate that free. And he said, a generation that does not know where their freedoms come from will not know why those freedoms are worth fighting for. Ronald Reagan said freedom is never more than one generation away from extinction. He was not exaggerating. He was being precise. When you raise children on a version of history that calls America complicated and unfinished, and never once tells them that this country was founded by men of extraordinary faith and courage, who believed they were accountable to God for what they built, you are not educating them. You are making them vulnerable. And Riley Gaines added that teaching children to love their country does not mean ignoring its flaws, but it also does not mean embellishing them. She said, the problem is that many institutions have become so focused on emphasizing what's broken, unfinished, or flawed that they've stopped teaching kids what makes America the greatest, freest, most prosperous nation in the world. That's why so many people from all across the world try to live, work, and start a family here through whatever means necessary. And this is Lou speaking now. I'll just interject. I've been hearing a lot about all the people coming from the Soccer World Cup playoffs who are just admiring America so much. All the opportunities, all the things from simple grocery store items, and all that's available, to just the beauty of the country. So many of these guests are just praising America, whereas some of the movie stars and others are just constantly berating America. They can never find anything good about it. This whole matter, I'm going to interject a little bit more here, this whole matter of leaving out the religious background of America is, of course, a grave disservice, not just to Christians and Jews, but to all Americans. It's a distortion of history, and the minute you distort history, you allow all kinds of things to grow up. Anyone who has studied the rise of Adolf Hitler knows that he based a large part of his appeal on this false idea that Germany had been betrayed at the end of World War I and not really beaten. If you study history, you know that Germany was on its last legs militarily. But some of the leaders, like von Hindenburg and others, helped perpetuate this myth that the civilians betrayed Germany. And Hitler bit right into that and made it a very big telling point for his rise to power. This is a danger. If you don't teach the children the truth, what are they going to do? They can't be expected as little children to find out all the truth for themselves. They don't have the ability, the wherewithal. And just a few examples. When I was in school, I knew that the pilgrims came to my home state of Massachusetts to seek religious freedom. And all you have to do is read some of their documents to see that that is absolutely true. Read the primary documents. Don't just read later histories. Go back to William Bradford of Plymouth Plantation that he wrote only a few decades later. Go back to the writings of John Winthrop, one of the founders of the Boston Colony, a little ways north of Plymouth. Go back to statements by Washington, Franklin. They call Franklin a deist. Maybe he was, but at least he had some religion. And call, go back to the writings of John Adams and many, many others. Go back to the fact that the abolitionists, many of those who wanted to end slavery, were Christians. And one of the men in Great Britain who had an influence on the people in the United States was William Wilberforce. It was his writing that ended the slave trade by Britain. Now, it didn't end it entirely for the USA that fast, and it took a war. Many people will say, well, Abraham Lincoln was a Christian. Well, they don't know that for sure, of course. I will say that in his second inaugural address, only about 6 weeks before his assassination, he quoted the Bible three times in what was only about a two-page address to the people on March 4th, 1865. So you see, a lot of these things are being intentionally left out to try and distort. And I don't have time to read all of this good article, but if you want to read it, as I record this, it was in today's Fox News, foxnews.com. Ben Carson, Riley Gaines, by scrubbing of faith from kids' U.S. history books for America's 250th. June 23rd, 2026, Fox News. Well, our time is rapidly getting by. Give you a couple of headlines. From the Washington Times, National Education Association hit with federal anti-Semitism investigation. Well, I was a member of the NEA, but it's not the NEA that you'll see today, I'll tell you that. As a teacher, I joined largely because you got automatic liability insurance if you joined as a protection against lawsuits. But it's not the kind of thing we have today. I'll just read a couple of key points. EEOC, Equal Opportunity Employment Commission, is investigating anti-Semitism allegations against NEA. The Brandeis Center filed a charge against the NEA for creating a hostile environment. And the NEA has faced backlash for distributing a map labeling Israel as Palestine. And Jewish delegates recorded being swarmed by pro-Palestinian members at the NEA assembly. And, of course, the NEA president, Becky Pringle, denies the allegations. But this is worth reading. This was in the Washington Times, Monday, June 22nd. National Education Association hit with federal anti-Semitism investigation. Well, our music is coming on, so that means our time is just about up. Write to me if you get a chance. Lou Carroll, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland. And the zip code is 21609. And check out our website that has all the different ways you can listen to this program, DividedKingdomRadio.com. DividedKingdomRadio.com. Thanks for listening. Good night.